Hello, world, and welcome to another episode of the P.O. Show. That's Polar Opposites, right here on Blog Talk Radio. As always, I'm your host, and I'm joined by my main man, my co-host, my friend, your friend, soon to be everybody's friend, none other than Mr. Cool Hand Phil. Phil, how are you today, sir?
Well, I feel like an intro waiting for Christmas to come around. This has been the longest 8 days off, waiting for these finals to start.
Yeah, I definitely hear you. It took me a minute to even realize that we weren't having basketball every single night. And that first night that it hit me felt like it was the Sunday after the Super Bowl. Just nothing to live for, nothing to live for. But speaking of NBA basketball and the finals around the corner, of course, this time of year, we would not even dream of discussing the NBA without our floor general for the show, talking about Indiana Basketball Hall of Famer Ron Rutland Jr. has joined the program. Ron, how are you, sir?
Doing great. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to another great show.
No doubt about it. And that's where we'll jump in right now. We'll start the show like we do every single show. As adults, we know that you make plenty of decisions every single day, and we're just glad that you decided to spend a little bit of time with us right here on the P.O. Show. A lot of different things are going on in this drought, if you would, as we this vacuum that the NBA playoffs have left since we haven't seen meaningful basketball in almost a week. A chance to focus on a couple other things. Of course, you've got the French Open going on. Federer is out, but Serena Williams looks like she might go ahead and prevail. She took care of Sloane Stephens and her nemesis that quick, forgot her name. The other great tennis player that always seems to battle Serena, she fell to an 8 seed earlier. So the road is pretty clear for her to claim yet another major. You've got all the craziness going on in world soccer and FIFA with indictments and embezzlement, and who knows where that'll all shake out. And then, of course, in the NFL, Adrian Peterson reported back to work today. I guess $13 million was enough reason to come back to work and set aside whatever differences they may have had. But enough of all of that. Again, we've been living for this NBA Finals to get started, and the wait's almost over. We've got 2 days left before the first game. Game one, Thursday night. It'll be on ABC at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central. Gentlemen, that's exactly where I want to start. I want to know from you, from your perspective, what is it that you expect to see in game one? What do you expect from the Cavaliers? What do you expect from the Warriors? What is it that you're hoping to see or expecting to see in game one? Phil, I'll start with you.
For most people, I've heard that this game one is going to be used for each team to kind of fill each other out, kind of work into a groove. I disagree with that. I think this finals is going to jump off to a great start where both teams are going to come out firing on all cylinders. I don't expect a sloppy, sluggish game one as they kind of wade in the water to get their feet wet. I think they're going to jump straight in the deep end, and I think the Warriors are going to come out hot. They're playing at home. The crowd, the crowd has not hosted a finals in, 40 years?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the city is just completely amped up, so I think the team is going to feed off that emotion. I think LeBron's going to come out and try to steal game one, so I think he'll have one of his better games, and I think it's going to come down to the final, 2 minutes of the game. But I just think it's going to be a quick start, a great start. I don't anticipate this sluggish start that many people anticipate.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Ron, how do you see the game one shaping up?
Man, I see it starting off, a pretty exciting game. I'm kind of with Coogan. I see it starting off, very, very fast-paced. Golden State, kind of saying to see everything is going to be a great atmosphere. I'm looking for them to really play well in game one. You know, I really think that, you know, the way their style of play, and the way they've been playing with the confidence they've been playing with, that, you know, they're going to come out and give, you know, Cleveland a lot of problems getting up and down the floor and then being able to find shooters and find players. I think they, you know, will really give them, you know, especially after the four spot with Draymond Green, I think that's really going to be a matchup to watch with him and Tristan Thompson. So, I'm really looking for Golden State to really come out and really kind of control the first game.
Okay. You know, interesting takes from both of you. If I look at the way the Western Conference Finals played out, and even part of some of the semifinals, in a lot of those games, the Warriors came out, I don't know if I want to say sluggish, I don't know if that's the right term, but definitely tentative. And I don't think this game will be any different. I think they'll come out tentative, and as we've seen in so many games, once they get to their second unit, and let's be honest, Cleveland's second, their second unit is not going to even hold a candle to what the second unit of what the Warriors will put on the floor. So I feel like they'll start out sluggish, and I think Cleveland will probably be kind of hot early on. Second unit will come out, make things kind of even, and then to your point, Phil, they'll kind of go back and forth even all the way down to the final 2 minutes where the game will be decided. But there are a couple of things, though. There are a couple of things that I can bank on, that you can bank on in terms of what's going to happen in this game one. Now, it's been well documented. We've talked about it. Phil, you had a long-time love affair with LeBron James, and he broke your heart, and you quit it. But that was short-lived, because you got you a new love in Steph Curry. Now, both of y'all, Ron, Phil, both of y'all happily married men, and I hope you never have to find out. See, now, on the other hand, I've had that awkward moment when your new girl meets the old girl. So let me just give you some things that you can expect to see in this matchup from your perspective, Cool Hand, because you got a new love, and for the first time is going to run in and see your old love. Now, the first thing that you can expect right off the bat, Phil, the new love is going to do everything in their power to look as good as they possibly can. See, your new love knows the only way they're going to keep you, they got to outshine the old love. So expect to see Steph Curry doing some things that you may have never seen him do before. And you might even say he might be pressing a little bit because he's going to be trying so hard to impress. Now, the second thing that you can expect to see, your old love is going to be bound and determined to show you that their new situation is better. Their new situation is better, and that they're better off in that new situation. Now, we know LeBron did wonderful things down in Miami. Now, Miami's sitting at home, making it to his fifth straight finals. I feel like LeBron is going to be trying to force the issue to let everybody know, hey, this Cleveland team is the best team I've ever been on. Whether he believes that or not, I think that's what he's going to try to show everybody when they suit him up on Thursday night. Now, the third thing, Phil, the third thing that you can count on, your old love, when you see your old love for that first time, even though you got a new love, your old love is going to remind you of every single thing that caused you to fall in love with him in the first place. Man, there are going to be some plays, Phil, that LeBron's going to do, and you're going to be like, mama, there go that man. I mean, you're going to see some unbelievable basketball play from LeBron, and it's going to remind you of exactly why you fell in love with him in the first place. And the last thing that you can expect, even in the midst of that love affair, your old love is also going to remind you why the relationship didn't work in the first place. So there are going to be some moments where he may revert back to that cautious, and I think both of you kind of spoke to it, that the common belief is they're going to be feeling each other out. So there may be some times there, Phil, early on where LeBron might revert to that distributor, that facilitator, and not being the beast, not in beast mode like we saw him in the other parts of the playoffs. And that might cause those hard feelings to set back in on you why you broke up in the first place. And, of course, that sends you right back into the arms of your new love. So, I thought I could... Go ahead. Well,
I think those points that you make are very fair, but the thing about Curry pressing, I don't think we'll see that because really his style is almost a pressing style anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he can really, you know, he kind of plays with reckless abandon, so I really don't think you can see him really get caught up in that moment and try any harder than he does because, I mean, he's a smaller player. For him to get his shots off, sometimes he has to take bad shots. But those bad shots, it's kind of like in football, you know, you may have to run the ball even when you're not intending to have success with it just to keep the defense honest so that you can throw over the top. So sometimes his style of play, even though it may look like bad shot, that's fine. He's just setting the defense up, you know, to keep coming out
right,
so that he can drive the basketball. So, you know, I don't think you'll see that, but you made a very interesting point about LeBron, and I think it is possible. You know, when I made my opening comments about I think he'll come out and play very aggressive and very good, but you don't know. I mean, he may revert back to that style, especially, you know, if things get a little bit tough, if the Warriors, you know, set up a defense where they leave him open on the outside and try to cut off the lanes to the basket like we saw San Antonio do last year, then that may cause him to revert back to that shell where, you know, he doesn't have a lot of movement. He just stands on the perimeter and does that little stutter step with his foot before he takes the jumper with 2 seconds left on the shot clock. So that's a great point. You know, if we see him revert back to that, and I am curious to see how the Warriors are going to play. You know, what is Steve Kerr going to draw up to try to contain LeBron? But if you go back to LeBron's comment, you know, where he said, hey, you can't slow Curry down, I think he was actually directing those comments at himself, too. I don't really know if you can slow LeBron down. I think you're just trying to minimize the effect that the other four players on the court have and let LeBron get his and hope that you can outscore them.
Right, right. Definitely that. Now, Ron, something that you brought up, talking about that matchup at the four spot with Draymond Green and Tristan Thompson. If there's one place that I think, statistically speaking, if there's one place that I feel like the Cavaliers have an edge, it's in rebounding. We saw there in the Eastern Conference Final, Tristan Thompson's focus on rebounding was key for second shots and, of course, getting the fast break going the opposite way. And if you take Tristan out of it, LeBron James, in his own right, rebounds at a very effective and high level. In fact, if you look at the stack rank of the rebound leaders, Tristan Thompson and LeBron James are both on that list, whereas in the Warriors, only Draymond Green makes the top 10, top 15. There's nobody else on the Warriors squad that ranks high as far as rebounds. Ron, so talk to me a little bit, Ron, in that regard, in terms of that matchup, Draymond Green, Tristan Thompson, who do you think has the edge?
In my opinion, I believe that Draymond Green has the edge basically because of the style of play, you know, and the focus that Golden State has on the three-point shot.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that they'll be doing, you know, I mean, I haven't seen the statistics on rebounding. I know Andrew Bogut was hurt quite a bit this year.
Okay.
So in the regular season. But, I believe that, you know, we can't forget about him on the rebounding end. What's going to happen is, Tristan Thompson's not going to be able to sit back in the lane with, you know, when the ball swings around to Draymond Green. He's going to have to get out. He's going to have to challenge And, you know, that's going to keep him away from defensive rebounds. And I think Draymond Green, he will make a conscious effort mm-hmm. to put a body on Tristan Thompson as far as on the defensive end and keeping him off the offensive glass.
Right.
So, you know, Tristan Thompson, we know he gets a lot of scoring, you know, from rebounding, they're not a throw the ball into him, let him go, you know, one-on-one kind of player.
Sure.
He's got to get his points pretty much off everybody else. But, because of the three-point shot, you know, I think that's where the advantage I'm going to give to Draymond Green.
Okay. Well, you know, it's interesting. I kind of like where we're going anyway. Let's go ahead. Matter of fact, let's just go through all the positions, and let's just take a stab at who has the advantage. And we'll start with the ones. Of course, you know, Phil's love affair with the MVP, Steph Curry, and then in the East, you've got who we had talked about earlier. Ron and I both said had some of the best handles in the league when talking about Kyrie Irving. So, Phil, I mean, I guess I know the answer, but, you know, for all practical purposes, I'll give you the opportunity to respond. Who has the edge in the one matchup with Curry and Irving?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is Curry. I mean, I don't think I'm being biased there. I just think when you're dealing with the MVP of the league and you see the things that Curry does and you see the efficiency rating that he has, I just don't know that you can deny that. Now, does Irving, is he a huge part of their team? I think so. But we don't know how banged up that he is, and you know, I just don't know if you know that style of play in the finals, if that's really going to get it done. I just feel like Curry does a better job of the flashy play. I just, mm-hmm. for some reason, I just feel like when he does the flashy play, he's still under control. And he does have some turnovers on some careless plays, but when you get the oohs and ahs of the crowd, I just feel like he's more impressive with that. I think he's going to get more points. And then I think on the defensive end, you know, I don't think Curry is going to be tasked with guarding Irving. I think that's going to be Klay Thompson, could be Barbosa, I mean, whoever it is. So I don't know if there's anyone on the Cavaliers uh-huh. that can stop Curry.
Right.
But I think there are some players on the Warriors team that can slow down Irving, as you know, great of a ball handler that he is, one of the top point guards in the league, I think his impact can be minimized. You know, instead of 25 points, you know, he may be held to 17. He's still contributing, still having an impact in the game, but I think you can slow him down a little bit. But with Curry, I mean, you've seen teams try to play him all different types of ways. You know, they try to crowd him. He still, you know, create space either with a step back or he drives to the basket and dishes, or they try to give him space to cut off those lanes and he's making the deep jumpers. He's just right now unguardable.
Right.
That's why I give the edge to Curry.
Okay. Ron, what do you think?
I mean, I'll have to give a slight edge to Curry as well. I mean, and I'm saying a slight edge. I mean, more. I'm looking at the fact that I don't think that Irving, you know, is 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like I said, with the style of play, you know, that, I mean, not that Irving doesn't have a green light, but, I mean, when you got the MVP, who has the greenest of green.
Sure he does.
You know, the way he gets up and down the floor and the way he's able to create his own shot off the dribble with the, you know, into the three, you know, I mean, there's, you know, obviously, there's nobody we've seen, you know, play like that ever. So from that standpoint, I got to give him a slight edge. But I'm still looking for Kyrie, you know, to be effective, to come out and show up, you know, regardless if he's, you know, 80% or 75. I got a feeling he's still going to be big in this series.
Yeah, allow me to talk out of both sides of my mouth because I can.
We always do.
Yeah, because I can. I feel like, let me start by saying right off the top, yes, I would have to give the nod to Steph Curry. Yeah, he's the MVP of the league. And, you know, the way he plays and the way he shoots the basketball, he puts me in the mindset, quite honestly, of a Roy Jones Jr. at boxing. And I'm talking about before he got put to sleep like 14 consecutive times. I'm talking about the undefeated Roy Jones. And what I mean by that is when you would watch Roy Jones box before he got that NyQuil repeatedly, you didn't know what to expect because he would hit you from anywhere. There was no angle, no place where he would not throw a punch from. And it may be unconventional as all get out. And to me, that's how Steph Curry shoots the ball. There's not a spot on the floor. There literally isn't a spot on the floor where he won't launch. You see him ducking behind a screen and you think he's going to the corner and he's launched his shot. You know, and he's barely gotten two steps out of, out of the pick, or someone screens for him on the other side, and he didn't even use the screen. He shoots before he even gets to the screen. I mean, there is no place on the floor where he's afraid to shoot from. So in that regard, I have to give him the slight nod. Now, when I look at Irving's game, you're both right. We don't know what we're going to get in terms of his physical abilities. In fact, his own words, Irving said in his own words, that even with all the rest, you know, he wouldn't be 100% unless something significant happened. Unless he's playing a little cat and mouse, even out of his own mouth, he doesn't expect to be 100% even with the rest. But I think in ways that might can help the team out. And the thing that Kyrie has to deal with that Steph Curry does not, there's nobody else on the Warriors team that's going to demand the ball away from Steph Curry. I mean, if he wants the ball, it's his. If anybody else gets the ball, it's because he decided to give it to him. Well, that's not the case in Cleveland, you know, because there's going to be times where, sure, Irving may want the ball, but guess what? So does LeBron. And if LeBron wants the ball, well, that's where the ball is going to go. So he's going to be limited in the time in his touches, so to speak. But that actually might play to his advantage. If, in fact, he's not 100%. If, in fact, he's not going to be able to show those handles that we've know him for, it might be a benefit to him to have LeBron be able to carry the load in some of the ball handling and decision making in terms of running the offense, and that in fact those fewer possessions, those fewer touches, might in fact make him a better, more efficient player. But it remains to be seen. But if I'm just going head to head, I agree that I would give the nod to Curry. Let's go look at the next guard position then. And then we're talking about Klay Thompson going up. And I guess in most cases, I guess they've got J.R. Smith starting at the two spot. Wow, that's actually a tough one.
Yeah, that's a great matchup there.
Ooh, that's tough.
Okay, now, they may not be guarding each other, but it's still, as far as the offensive end and on the defensive end, you know, respectively, how are they going to perform? I mean, I think that is that's an excellent matchup. But on this one, too, I'm going to give the edge to Klay Thompson because I think, you know, Klay is tasked and he has a reputation of being a great defender. I mean, you saw the job that he did on Harden in the last series where, you know, Harden is one of those guys where they're almost unguardable. Mm-hmm. And the health defense, of course, was huge, but, you know, he really did a great job because Harden, you know, he poses a lot of problems for defenders because, you know, he sticks those arms out. I don't like when he gets those calls because, you know, he's trying to draw the foul, not necessarily trying to make the shot. I don't like when they get bailed out. And a lot of times he gets bailed out and makes it to the free throw line. But I thought for the most part they did a great job with containing him and trying to give, you know, once he gets down in the basket, you know, avoiding that contact. So excellent job by Klay Thompson. You know, and I don't know a lot about J.R. Smith on the defensive end. I know he is a fantastic knockdown three-point shooter, and it's really going to just depend. I mean, right now I get the edge to Thompson, but you don't know which type of player is going to step up. I think it was Green last year for the Spurs who just shot lights out in their last two series of the year, where you know he was just making every single shot. And it's a dagger. You know, when you're down by 8 points and you're trying to make a run, and you cut the lead down, now you got it down to six, and they come down and make a three. I mean, that's a dagger. That's what J.R. Smith does. You know, he's like the momentum killer. So you think you're getting a little bit of momentum, mm-hmm. and then boom, he hits a three-point shot, and now you're down by double digits again. So if he's able to do that, he could end up being more effective. But, you know, like I said, with Thompson playing such good defense, and he's also one of those guys that can put up 30 points. I mean, what did he have this year, 36 points in a quarter or something like that? So he can fill it up. So that's why I give the edge to him, because I think he'll be more impactful on both ends of the court.
Yeah. Two quarters in the season where he scored over 40 points in two different quarters. And in all fairness, you know, we're saying J.R. Smith, but they flip and flop, because sometimes Smith will start, Shumpert will come off the bench, and then sometimes Shumpert starts and Smith comes off the bench. So we're really, when we say that for Cleveland, we're really talking about, you know, a double-headed monster there. Either one could get the start. But, Rod, how do you see the two-guard shaping up?
Yeah, and I'll go with the same comparison of using J.R. Smith in that scenario. And I look at it as a wash. I'm looking at it as pretty much even draw in that scenario from the standpoint of, you know, some factors. If I see Klay Thompson having to guard LeBron, I mean, the edge could easily go, in my opinion, to J.R. Smith.
Right.
Because I have noticed that when Klay Thompson has to guard, you know, the best player, the best scorer, kind of takes away from his offense a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care who JR is guarding. I've never seen anything take away from his offense but himself.
Right.
So it's just about hitting. He's still going to be, you know, looking and being very aggressive offensively. But let's say if Harrison Barnes is guarding LeBron,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think it'll give, you know, be a little bit, you know, more opportunity for Klay to look for a shot. And, you know, maybe be not as tired on offense. So I really think, you know, it could go either way. So I'm pretty much going to call it a draw on from that standpoint of that position.
Yeah, I would be inclined to agree with you, Ron, that I almost see that as a draw. But if I had to pick one, I think I would go with J.R. Smith and company. And the reason that I say that is, you know, we've been begging for Klay to have a big game this entire playoffs, and it hasn't happened outside of the one quarter that Steph Curry went out with the head injury, with the head contusion. So we're talking about one quarter out of the entire playoffs where he lit him up. I think he would have had something like 24 for the game, and he scored 20 of them in the quarter or something crazy like that. So he's really, you know, so it's really been one quarter. And you're right, though, Phil, you're exactly right. He can get hot, and it's light. I mean, you know, and it's over. You can forget about it, you know, if he gets hot. But we've only seen him get hot once. And there was a stat that I meant to bring out once before, in regards to just how good J.R. Smith really is. When you talk about getting going, they brought up a stat talking about, I mean, look, we all know Steph Curry's the MVP. A lot of that has been from his pure shooting and his three-point shooting. They brought up a stat talking about his field goal percentage of contested threes versus non-contested threes. And I'm not going to remember these exact right, but it was something to the effect of he was 1 for 7 or 8 on contested. Maybe it was 2 for 8 on contested threes. And then something ridiculous like 9 for 12 on uncontested threes. Well, J.R. Smith on the other coast was an unbelievable 8 for 8 on contested threes. He didn't have any uncontested. He went 8 for 8 on contested threes. So I said all that to say this. Don't sleep on J.R. Smith's ability to shoot the rock from downtown, even if he's got a Harrison Barnes or a Klay Thompson on him. He's proven that even being well defended, he can still get his shot off and it's still going to be pure. And Klay Thompson can't say that. You know, he can't say that. Heck, he can't even say that he's got a good percentage on wide open threes, let alone contested. So that's why I got to ride with J.R. Smith on that one. Now, Ron, you were just talking about if Harrison Barnes is playing, you know, who he's deciding to guard. And the natural matchup would be Harrison Barnes to guard LeBron James. And quite honestly, I got to go against what you were saying, Phil. I actually felt like Harrison Barnes played much better defense on James Harden than Klay Thompson did. In fact, you know, Harden's great games were with Klay Thompson guarding him. And when he got shut out, the two games where he was just non-existent, that's when Harrison Barnes was D'ing him up. So naturally you would expect, at least I would, naturally expect, and we're going to the three spot, that you'd see Harrison Barnes using his defensive prowess against LeBron James. How does that, I mean, you know what, I don't even know why we talk about that match. I mean, it's not even really worth talking about, really. I mean, obviously, LeBron gets the nod there, greatest player on the planet, and from an offensive standpoint, Harrison Barnes is not really an offensive threat. But defensively, so I'll switch the question up there. Defensively, can Harrison Barnes do to LeBron James that in which he did to James Harden?
Yeah, I think it just depends on LeBron. If he decides to play into those hands, or if the jumper just isn't going, then I think it's possible that, you know, if they shut those lanes off and they're able to help defense on the offside, you know, where he's not able to make, you know, an easy dish for a basket, then I think so. But I think it just depends on if LeBron is going to have the confidence to shoot those jumpers without waiting. You know, where he holds the ball on the wing for 14 seconds, you know, basically the whole shot clock before he decides to go ahead and shoot the jumper. If that's the LeBron that shows up, then yeah, I think Barnes has an excellent chance at him. If he catches it and the defense is playing off of him and he shoots the jumper just like he would and shoot around or in practice, and he's making them, then yeah, I don't think there's anyone that can stop LeBron. So I think it's all up to him. It's up to his head and if he's going to come up and commit to it, hey, if they're going to give me the jumper, I'm just going to commit to it. I don't care if I miss 6 in a row. I'm going to keep shooting the open shot until I, you know, start knocking them down. I think LeBron would have a lot of success. It doesn't matter who's guarding him. It's irrelevant. So it's up to him just to knock those down.
Okay. Ron, what do you think? I mean, what does Harrison Barnes have for, if anything? I mean, what does he have for LeBron?
Man, I don't, like Phil said, it's up to LeBron. I don't know if he has anything. It's going to take definitely a team defensive effort. I mean, I think Harrison Barnes is athletic enough to, you know, cause, you know, some, I don't want to say issues for LeBron, but he can take something away. It just really depends on what they decide to take away.
Uh-huh.
They want to take away the drive, make him shoot the jumper, or take away the jumper and push him into help.
Right.
So it really depends on, you know, what their philosophy is or how they choose to attack LeBron defensively. But, you know, Harrison Barnes is athletic enough. He does have the size, the length, you know, to take away, you know, one or the other if he knows he has help.
Sure.
So, I mean, he's going to play a factor. I mean, obviously, I mean, I know I might be getting ahead, but, you know, the better matchup would be Iguodala, you know, but I wish they would start him in this scenario and bring Barnes off the bench, because I think Barnes is a better offensive player than Iguodala.
Okay.
So that would be the way I would approach it, but obviously I'm not there. So, but that, to me, that would be the wrinkle. That would be the change of the series to me, if they really would like to make, you know, a strong statement defensively against LeBron in the beginning.
That's very, very interesting. That's very interesting. And then, of course, and it's a great problem to have if you're Steve Kerr, that you've got a second unit of one-time All-Stars, you know, that you can plug in as you see fit. So we'll definitely look for that. A couple of things that you touched on. Obviously, if you're the Warriors, I think, yes, you choose turn LeBron into a jump shooter. I think that it's been proven that that's one place where you can have some success. And if you go back and look at the Eastern Conference Finals and the games where LeBron, you know, had much success, it was when he was going to, you know, just taking it to the rack every single time, being able to drive. And I think you're right. I think Harrison Barnes, with his length, can make it uncomfortable enough. I'm not going to say stop him, but make it uncomfortable enough to make LeBron have to make decisions, as opposed to being single-minded in, I'm going to the hole every time, to make him have to make decisions. And something else, I agree with you wholeheartedly. It'll be the help defense that'll actually win the day. If Harrison Barnes can do enough to make it uncomfortable enough so that LeBron has to make a decision, and that uncertainty then gives Draymond Green and or Bogut the opportunity to come and help, that's going to be a lot, because I don't think there's going to be any room inside, I guess is my point, because I don't expect Tristan on the offensive end. I don't expect Tristan or Mozgov to stretch the floor at all. So I feel like Bogut and Draymond Green can just stay at home. And I don't think there'll be much room for LeBron to get inside. And then if Harrison Barnes can do his thing, and like I said, just make it uncomfortable. I'm not asking to stop him. Just make it uncomfortable enough, forcing LeBron to make decisions as opposed to just going in and making baskets. I think that can be all the difference in the game. But then, of course, then you bring the point, you raise the other point that if you've got the more athletic Iggy on him, that's, wow. I can't wait to see see how the first game plays out and see if that is in fact an adjustment that Steve Kerr makes, because I think you're right. I think that could be very interesting. Brings us to the five spot then. Mozgov and Bogut. I got to slightly give the nod to Mozgov, because he actually is an offensive option for them. They run their offense through him often, and that may be because Atlanta didn't really have, the teams that they played really didn't have a true center. They didn't have an answer. So they could easily, they could easily get offense through Mozgov, and that won't be true with Bogut. But if all things considered equal, the way they've played throughout these playoffs, I would have to give the slight edge to Mozgov, because again, they actually seek him out for offense to give him an opportunity to get easy baskets early.
Playoffs, I've really been impressed with the defensive presence of Bogut. So, I'm curious to see when he doesn't get in foul trouble. But, to me, the refs kind of pick on him. I mean, there's a lot of fouls where I just don't see the contact, especially down low. Typically, they let those guys bump and bang a little bit. But Bogut just always seems to pick up these petty fouls that are kind of surprising to me. So if he can stay out of foul trouble, I was really impressed with the way that he defends the basket and how effective that he was at making others, kind of disrupt and change their shot. So that is another curious matchup, because if the offense is going to go through Mozgov, then that means Bogut or, I think Space is coming back. But one of these big men, Festus Azili, but I guess we're talking about starters. So it will be interesting to see if they can shut down that offensive presence of the five men for the Cavaliers, because like you said, Bogut, the offense never really goes through him. Now they do run plays where they try to get to the basket, or they try to get it into the middle of the lane to the number four, the number three guy, and then they throw the alley-oop to Bogut. So he doesn't really have a direct impact on the offense. He's just more of a, you know, safety outlet, if you will. So that is a good matchup. But I don't know. I think that's a little bit closer than, you know, if you just look at it on the surface, because I think that Bogut can have an impact on that defensive end. And, of course, rebounding. I think it's going to come down to me. I'll be swayed by whoever wins the rebounding battle. That's who is winning the kind of the matchup of those five men.
Okay. How do you see it, Ron?
Yeah, if I give a slight edge, I'm going to give it to Bogut just because I feel like his defensive, kind of cool hand was saying, his defensive presence, I think, is a little bit more important to what Golden State does defensively
okay.
than what Mark Goff provides for Cleveland offensively.
Okay.
And, you know, Mark Goff's not a bad defensive player, but he's not the shot blocker. It should be, is what I've seen with Bogut. Like Kuhn said, I've been very impressed, with the way he's played, the way he's defended. You know, that Memphis series really showed me that, hey, this guy, you know, I thought he played excellent, you know, playing against, Big Zach and, against Gasol. I think I'm
going
to get a slight edge to Bogut in the series.
Okay. Yeah, and to your point, Phil, on the rebound game, during these playoffs thus far, Bogut is ranked 20th, whereas Mozgov falls in behind him. I think you got to go all the way down. Boy, you got to go way down. Let's see. No, yeah, 29. Down to 29 to find Mozgov there on the rebounds. So if everything holds true the way it has, then you'd be correct then to give the nod to Bogut. But
and isn't that kind of interesting that, you know, the way that some of these big men, how they're kind of falling behind in the rebounds, but it's almost because a lot of these big guys, the game is changing to where they can spread them out and take those outside jumpers, and it's almost like it leaves more rebounds for the guards. You know, you look at some of these games, and, you know, the guards have 12 rebounds, and the center may only have, you know, 8, or, you know, may only out-rebound them by 2. But it's just kind of strange, I guess, that they get pulled out and you have the 5, you know, guy taking the jumper and the other 5 is matched up with them trying to block the shot. Then, you know, you've got 3s and the 2s and those guys coming in to make the rebound. It's kind of interesting.
Well, I think, too, part of it is we've seen it again throughout these playoffs. When a team needs to make a run, it's been when they've went small.
Go small.
So, yep. You know, I think these big guys... And that's again why I said, you know, Cleveland seems to try to go through Mozgov early. They try to get quick, easy baskets early with him because of that. I think they figure, hey, if we can get, you know, 8 or 10 here between the first and second quarter before these teams start going small on us, you know, we got to take him off the floor. Then, you know, then good. Let's get as many points as we can. You don't see that being an emphasis late in games. It seems like that's something they try to focus on very early. And it may be the other part of that may be, too, that they're trying to get the other teams big in foul trouble early to make things easier, to free the lane up for LeBron so he can do his thing. You know, I don't necessarily know what the thinking is behind it. I'm just telling you the trend that I've seen. They hit him early, and then, you know, and you don't hear from him again type thing. But we'll see what that how that plays out in this. You know, it's been a long season, it goes without saying, and it seems even longer because we've got this this 1 week layoff. But LeBron James spoke out about this, and I know, even though that was your boy back in the day, I know that's one of the things that was a huge turnoff for you, is LeBron seems to have an opinion about everything. And most recently, he expressed his opinion about the NBA season, saying that the season was too long and that they play too many games. You know, it's hard to hear that, and I don't know, I won't say take it serious. It's hard to hear that and feel sorry for somebody that's being paid gazillions of dollars to play basketball, especially in when the season has been 82 games seemingly since the beginning of time. You know, the Magic Johnson era, they played 82 games. The Larry Bird era played 82 games. The Michael Jordan era played 82 games. The Kobe Bryant era played 82 games. But now, all of a sudden, LeBron James says that's just too much. How do you guys see? Is the season too long? Do they play too many games?
I don't think so. I mean, how many games have they played so far? I mean, 62 games, I guess.
Well, they've played 82 regular season plus they swept the first round, and then they went.
I think it's 80. Let's see, what would that be? 53 plus 30. 82. It's got to be more than that. So I guess this is not showing the playoffs because that's just 82.
Well, right here, but, I can tell you right here.
I think he's only played in, 69 games this year. So, I mean, I think he missed however many. So, technically, he did, and yet he still got paid for a whole season. I mean, I think this is just a sign of the times. I mean, our generation right now, we're much weaker than our grandfathers. You know, of course, I've talked about this many times, but, you know, the things that our grandfathers accomplished, there's no way that, you know, my generation could pull that off. We're just weaker. We just have a lot more comforts in life, which have made us softer. And I don't know. I mean, to me, LeBron is turning into the Nick Saban of the NBA. I mean, every time I hear Nick Saban talk, especially like in these spring meetings, and he brings up these, you know, points that he wants changed, and, you know, we have to slow the game of football down. And, I mean, to me, it's ridiculous. Some of the things that, you know, he brings up that I'm thinking that's not even an issue. And there's an ulterior motive to it.
Sure.
But no, I don't think the season, I just don't think basketball, the season is too long. I mean, I think it's a man's game, and, you know, you play college ball and you go to the NBA and you make this money. But kind of about what I've talked about with these guys, and they sign these contracts, and after a year, if they have a good year, then they want to, you know, restructure it. Well, no, I mean, if you had a bad year, could the team come back and say, hey, we're going to restructure and pay you less? No, that's not how it works. You need to honor what you do. So if you go to these guys and say, hey, okay, we can play a 60-game series, but instead of making $20 million, you know, you're going to make 12. There's no way they would go for that. But everyone, the old saying, they want their cake and eat it too. You cannot have it both ways. You can't play less games and make the same amount of money. So I just think it's hogwash, you know, to even – and where do you make these comments, Darren? I mean, don't tell me it's been the leading up to the finals.
It was during this layover in between, you know, just a reporter at practice, you know, I don't, so
I just find that strange that this one is mine. You know, to me, you think your complete focus would be on the Warriors and taking care of winning four games. I just, you know, to me, it's just surprising that he would come out and make these comments, you know, save that for the off season or the preseason.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't like, just like you said, I think he has too many opinions about everything.
Yeah. Now you made the statement that, you know, the players have a big season, they want to renegotiate. And if they have a bad season, they don't renegotiate. No, if they have a bad season, they mess around and get cut or traded. So it does actually work. It does actually work.
You get paid. That's what I'm saying. Whenever you get traded like that, that team is still paying your contract, or that contract transfers over to the new team. So no, you don't get paid less. Now, you may be playing for a different team, but you still get paid the same amount of money. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Sure, sure. What do you think, Ron? I mean, you've actually played the game. You know what it takes to go through a complete season at, playing at the highest levels. Is 82 games too much with back-to-backs and playing 4 out of 5 nights?
I don't think 82 games is too much. I mean, like you said before, it's been, the sign. I mean, it's always been what it's been in the NBA. Now, what has changed is the time frame that those 82 games have been played within.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's the issue.
Mm-hmm.
See, I don't know if anybody is really addressing that. I think the season's actually been shorted as far as days, but you're still trying to fit in the same amount of games in a shorter amount of time.
Right.
I think one day I was watching ESPN, they were showing, on this day, the Philadelphia 76ers beat such and such, and here we are in the playoffs, and they were talking about it was a regular season game.
Right.
During that time of the year. So that, opened my eyes to say, wait a minute. Well, if they were playing at this time of the year in a regular season game, we're in the playoffs. That's the issue.
Right.
Right there. But, with TV contracts, all these things, because those players back then that played those 82 games, you can go back and look and say they didn't have that many back-to-backs or 3 out of 4 night games. That's where the issue is.
Right.
And that's where it needs to be addressed. When you stretch it out, another 3 to 4 weeks to take that away, go back the way it used to be, So versus just taking away games. I know the emphasis, unfortunately, on the regular season is not like it used to be.
Mm.
As far as, you're not going to see that mentality like Jordan had. You know what? We want to be the best team. We're going to go out here and try to win 73 games to beat the 72.
Sure.
It's not going to happen. So everybody is, let's rest up. Let's be ready. Let's be fully rested for the playoffs. And, it's that new, analytical basketball. Let's play them less minutes so we can, be ready for this, which is most important.
Mm. Yeah, again, both of y'all, spot on, make some very good points. Are we weaker? We're definitely weaker. In fact, it was prophesied in the Bible that the next generations would grow weaker and wiser, and I think you're right. Weaker in the sense that they can't do 82 games, wiser in the sense, Ron, in terms of the analytics and how to approach the game, whether it be, whether it's nutrition and workload, the whole nine. And then, of course, you're exactly right. I mean, first of all, it's not even a real conversation to have because there's no way in the world that any owner is going to take games off the schedule. They're not going to reduce the inventory of their product that makes them so much money just because a few players, say it's too much. And agreed, 3 out of 4 nights and 4 out of 5 nights, that's not a good product. I don't want that product of the fourth game fourth game in 5 nights. I don't even want to go to that game because it's going to be garbage. So that's something that they definitely need to address. But again, there's not an owner in the league that's going to take that inventory off the shelf. You got 82 games that people are buying tickets for, so forth and so on. That's not going to happen. But I will say this. If there is somebody that is qualified to speak out on it, it is LeBron James. Because think about this, guys. He's played in 5 straight finals and add in a USA basketball tour on top of that. The dude's played a lot of basketball. So if there's anybody that I would give a pass complaining about playing an 82-game season, it's him. Because if you really add up how much basketball he's played over those 5 seasons, that's a lot of games. And it's in my opinion, that's what used Kobe up. Because Kobe was on that kind of stretch where he was playing, deep runs every single year in the playoffs, then playing in the Olympics, you know, on and on and on, to the point where you get a lot of mileage on your knees and you start to break down. And LeBron may be looking at it from that aspect, maybe saying, man, I don't want to be Kobe. You know, I don't want to have, you know, get to a spot into my 30s and have 3 or 4 seasons of just nagging injury after nagging injury because we played deep into the playoffs and then played USA basketball and took a month off and was right back at it again. You know, I mean, it's crazy to me to even say that we don't even crown an NBA champion until July. That's crazy to me. But that's what happens. And then, you know, a couple of months later, they're right back at it again. So I think, Ron, I think you said it best, that it's not the number of games, but it's the amount of time that they're using for these games. And then the other part, too, you know, back in those earlier days, the Kareem days and all that, that first round was only 3 games anyway, and the second round was 5.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
That's a good point.
You know, so, you know, you could get through, you could get, think about it, if you were good, let's say like Golden State, or, well, heck, Cleveland even swept the first round. If you were good, you could get to your conference final in about, what, 5 games. That's 2 sweeps, because the second round was a 5-game series. It was only the conference final and the NBA finals that was 7 games, right? First round was a 3-game. The first round was a... Say it again.
Yeah, but
money and greed comes in. You know, those owners stretching that out.
Yep.
You know.
Boom. And I don't know if it's the owners. I mean, I think it's the players. And I think the players want this money. I mean, like Latrell Sprewell said, he can't feed his kids on $3 million a year. You know, so I don't know what these guys are eating. But you know, that's the thing. Back then, what did those guys make? I mean, that's, you know, you mentioned they only, in the first 2 rounds that they swept, they only played 4 games. But what was their salary back then? You know, there's no way they were making millions of dollars. So, but I don't know. I mean, to me, it seems like the season is stretched out further now than it was. I mean, because I know they showed some stats over the weekend, or actually in the last series, and the NBA Finals was already over. You know, you look at 30 years ago, the Finals had already been played at this point, but they were still playing those 82-game seasons. So I'm just kind of... I think they have stretched it out to try to limit some of those back-to-back. I need to go and pull up a schedule, but it seems like they have stretched it up to get more rest. But that's why it is pushing the season, you know, not being over until July. You know, but I guarantee you, back in the day, they didn't get 8 days rest before the final started. So I don't know. I just kind of wish, hey, just show up. You know, you guys have a great life. Just play the game. I just don't know if that's the comment you should be making right now leading up to the finals, worried about how many games are played in the regular season. It just seems like a moot point right now.
Well, and my...
You know, like parents are saying that the playoffs have been stretching out because now we have a 7-game series each round. So that's why it's a long season.
True.
Not because of the 82 games, because of the playoffs.
Right.
The playoffs... You know, they went from 3 to 5 to 7. You're right.
Y'all
forgot all about
that. Yeah, and don't get me wrong. Even as a fan, I'm glad that they made that change. You know, because I always felt like that 3-game series, I was like, man, you can't make a mistake. You slip up in a 3-game series one night, you could be going home. So I've always, I mean, I like when they made the change. Don't get me wrong. But again, I'm just saying to LeBron's point, and I hold steadfast to that. If there's anybody that can make the statement about how many games we play, I'll take it from LeBron than I will somebody else, because nobody else has played in 5 straight. Nobody else has played in 5 straight finals plus USA basketball. Nobody. So, you know, and I think that you know, I think there's a spot where that can take a toll on you. We're running up against the clock. I did want to get real quick, because I got to, because I feel like it's important. I do want to just real quick get into this concussion situation with the Warriors. And I know, Phil, you and I, we had some words about it throughout the week going back and forth. But it just seemed, I don't know. I find it very troubling. I'll use that word. I find it very troubling that they did not look at Klay Thompson the same way they looked at Steph Curry. In other words, they didn't go through, it didn't seem like they did. Now, we weren't at the game, so we don't know exactly what happened. But it didn't appear that they went through their concussion protocol and baseline testing and all of that like they did with Steph Curry. And in fact, although it's been debate going back and forth, I'm almost 100% sure they had him cleared, ready to play, to go back in. And as I said to you earlier, Phil, I actually think he had already checked in at the scorer's table. And the reason I say that is because I got an alert on my phone from the NBA and ESPN saying Klay Thompson's returned to the game. He hadn't gone on the court yet. Timeout was called. He was about to go in. Somebody pointed, hey, you got blood coming out of your ear. And that's what stopped him from going back in the game. So, you know, Ron, again, I defer to you, Ron, as a player. I mean, are we doing everything we can be doing in terms of player safety as it regards? Because, you know, let's face it, we don't talk about concussions in basketball a lot. I mean, it's not a full contact sport like football. But did it alarm you at all? And the difference, the way that they handle Steph Curry versus the way they handle Klay Thompson?
Yeah, I was a bit surprised just because of the way the blow that he took. I mean, he took a full knee, you know, to the temple.
Mm-hmm.
So when I seen that he was returning, you know, I was like, well, maybe, you know, it didn't catch him just the way I thought it might have.
Mm-hmm.
But then later on that evening the next day, actually, I heard his dad on a radio show,
mm-hmm,
discussing how he had, you know, headaches. I even think Klay Thompson might have said in an interview after the game.
Yeah.
You know, he had a slight headache. His dad said, you know what, I had to drive him home. He started vomiting. So, you know, I've only had a concussion one time, and I was in college, so it's been quite a few years ago. And I don't remember, you know, how delayed or quickly I was able to feel, you know, those symptoms. So, you know, but I'm just even surprised that, like you said, that he was, you know, came out as quickly as he did. And, you know, maybe he was able to hide it. Because, I mean, it wasn't that much longer, you know, when he had that interview, that he said, you know what, he got a slight headache. When I heard him say that, I was like, uh-oh,
mm-hmm,
he shouldn't have said that.
Yeah, I mean, he went as far, and he even went as far as to say he was dizzy. Say he had a headache and he felt dizzy. You know, in that post game interview, and I think what got me more than anything else, the next day, and I heard the same interview with his dad, Michael Thompson, that you heard. You know, the next day, his dad goes on and says he had to drive him home. He threw up, yada yada yada. The day after that, the agent had the nerve to come out and say, Klay Thompson does not have a concussion. I'm like, what is going on here? Phil, get in on this. What was your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was unacceptable that they didn't go through the protocol. I mean, whenever you see that a guy took a shot to the head, to me, and this is what I told you know, when we discussed this during the week, how did you miss this? I mean, you're the doctor. You have one job to do, that's look after the players. I mean, more specifically, especially when they take a shot to the head, to me it's a foregone conclusion that you do a concussion protocol test. I mean, I can't even fathom, like I tried to sit there and think, okay, well, how did they miss this? You know, maybe they saw, you know, that he had a cut on his ear, so they tried to treat that. I don't know how someone can take a shot to the head, a knee to the head, fall down, holding their head, you know, walking off the court. You could tell he was kind of like Steph Curry, a little bit woozy, and you do not do the test. I can't even fathom how that happened. You know, and I would like someone to interview these doctors and say, why did you not do the test? And, you know, maybe they have an explanation, because I've been surprised before when you hear someone's explanation, you go, oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. You know, maybe it, you know, we ask them questions you know, from the beginning how they feel, and if they answer a certain way, then we proceed. But to me, it should just be a foregone conclusion that if somebody takes a shot to the head, you test for a concussion. You know, no exception, you test for it. And, you know, to your point, I thought he went back in the game. You know, but to your point, I think he did go to the scorer's table. Mm-hmm. You know, when he was about to check in, he felt, it's almost like I think his teammates pointed it out to him. I think there was a timeout, and they pointed it out that he had, you know, blood. So it was like he couldn't even feel the blood dripping out of his ear.
Yeah.
And that's when I got worried, because I didn't know it was the laceration. I think this guy is bleeding from his ear, and yet, you know, he's still about to check into the game. So anyway, they went back, and I think they held on to the lead, so they didn't feel the need to put him in. But I can't, for the life of me, I cannot fathom how you would not test for a concussion in that scenario. Makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, like I said, I joked about with Steph Curry and coming back in and throwing up an air ball, joking about him seeing three backboards instead of just the one. But with the Klay Thompson thing, there's no joke there. And the shot he took, you know, we can debate on Curry how much of that impact was on his head or his shoulder or you know, we can debate back and forth what part of his body took the brunt of the force, but not with Klay. I mean, he took a knee to the head, point blank, period. And it just, yeah. I mean, I don't know what to say about it. I hope, you know, that's another thing too. I am glad that if there's anything good that came out of that break, you know, this layoff, that he did have enough time to recover properly. And in fact, it was said today, he was cleared today under the concussion protocol. But again, a little bit troubling. He got cleared today, but he practiced yesterday. Now, what kind of nonsense is that?
Well, that's part of the protocol, though.
Oh, is that right?
The protocol. Yeah, I was reading on it, but you can't get cleared, I think, until it's almost like you really get like a full workout in. So the first day, he just kind of practiced, ran around, and then after practice, they examine you and, you know, ask you how you feel and all that. Then the next day, mm-hmm. they actually work you out. You know, you have to break a sweat, you know, get your heart rate up, and then we text you again. And I think he even had a neurological exam, like an MRI or
okay.
whatever they do when they examine the brain, and it showed clear as well. So he was symptom-free even after, you know, he went through exertion. And then, of course, I don't know if the MRI is part of the protocol, but they went ahead and did that too. So I think once he started exhibiting those symptoms, but, you know, to Ron's point, in the interview after the game, he said he was busy.
Mm.
And they said, oh, I'm a little bit busy. Well, you know, to me, I'm thinking, well, yeah, you probably have a concussion that they just didn't test you for. I just cannot for the life of me realize why they wouldn't test for that.
Well, look.
It's just inexcusable. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, should they, you know, find the team, you know, and I'm not saying we need to overreact in this instance. I think Adam Silver said, you know, these are kind of freak accidents. I agree, but these freak accidents are going to happen. It's going to happen again where someone takes a shot, and there should be no excuse to not test these players immediately. Now, and I will say this, when I first saw the play live, I did not see the knee to the head because Ariza's back was to us, and I thought he just bumped in to his shoulder. It was when you see the angle from the back of Thompson. And that's when I saw the knee. So the only thing I can think of is the team did not see him take the shot to the head. You know, they may have seen the same thing that I saw. Like, oh, you know, he got hit in the shoulder, so he's kind of shaking up. They take him to the locker room. You know, but you still think you would ask him some questions. You know, where did you get hit? I don't know. I'm trying to come up with excuses,
Terrence.
I'm having a tough time because I don't know if
there's no excuse for it. And the fact of the matter is, I mean, if these coaches are losing jobs just because they didn't win a seven-game playoff series, then this medical staff definitely should have to answer to, you know, not something as basic as, hey, well, let's make sure we give this player a thorough checkout before we put him back in a game. So I don't have a problem with that at all. So, but that pretty much is going to wrap us up on this show. So we got a decision, gentlemen. Next week's show would systematically fall on game day, on Tuesday. We can either do it before, or we could do it the day after, because that actually might give us a little more to discuss. We have two games in the bucket. Game one and game two would be played if we had our next recorded show on that Wednesday. I'm personally voting to have it on that Wednesday.
You're the host, let's ride with you, man.
Cool. So that's what we'll do. So we will sign off for tonight. But hey, this time next week, when we all convene again, we'll either be looking at a 2-0 or a 1-1 finals. Either way, it'll be a lot to discuss, and there'll be a lot to dissect. And again, I am most interested in seeing if, in fact, the Warriors will go with Ron's coaching suggestion and bringing Iguodala off.
It would be three games played, Thursday, Saturday, and Tuesday.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. My bad. All the more better.
That's right.
So, good deal. Yeah, I like that. Be able to have that extra game in there. So, good deal. So, the playoffs will be half over by the time we all come back together again. So, if you've liked this show and want to listen to it again and all others, by all means, check us out on iTunes. And in between time and in the meantime, you can check us out on the show page at www.poshowradio.com. You've been listening to Polar Opposites, P.O. Show, right here on Blog Talk Radio with Big T, Cool Hand Phil, and Ron Rutland Jr. That's it for tonight. We'll do it again next week. Good night, folks.